Gaming Uncensored is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
Controlling transmission.
Divided by 1,000 miles of barren wasteland, two men mysteriously linked by alien technology on a podcasting mission to boldly deliver video game news and views directly to your brain. This is Gaming Uncensored. Now, your Gaming Uncensored guides, the dynamic duo, the video game gurus, a man on wheels, and a Yeti with a modem, Jamie and Tommy.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. How you doing? My name is Jim Jordan, and this is a brand new episode of Gaming Uncensored. And we're playing old games. And of course, Tommy's sitting over there. What's up, man?
You're playing an old game. I'm playing a remake of an old game.
Well, it's still an old game, bro.
It's all nostalgia.
It's an old game, bro.
Yeah, well, one day we're going to play new games again, and that's going to be weird.
Yeah, it really is going to be weird. I have a whole discussion about that coming up, which I think you're going to find interesting because it's taken me 41 years. But as a gamer, I think I have found my preferred game type to play.
Nice.
Like the one that I'm always going to default to as long as I probably live. So we'll get to that in a little bit, but what else is on the show today?
We got a bunch of The Last of Us Part 2 details. There was a big State of Play that just happened a couple of days ago about The Last of Us Part 2, which is just less than a month away. It's really close at this point. So just around the corner, we'll talk about that. And then we've got E4 starting next week, really. Sony has their big event for the PlayStation 5 reveal-ish. We don't know exactly what they're revealing, but we know there's going to be games. That's next week. And so we'll talk a little bit about what we're expecting from that. Some details about how it looks like Sony is approaching next-gen versus how Microsoft is approaching next-gen. That's kind of fascinating. I think will be some interesting discussion there. We've got a new VR headset. No Man's Sky is coming to Game Pass. That's pretty freaking cool.
That's amazing.
We probably won't talk about it any more than me just teasing it right here, but go to show notes, gaminguncensored.com, because it's there. But that's amazing. That's super cool. So now you get No Man's Sky on Game Pass, both Xbox and PC, just to be clear. It is coming to PC on Game Pass. So yeah. And maybe a couple other things we get to.
Have we mentioned that we're the cheapest people on the face of the planet? I mean, no offense to any game developers out there, and we do spend a ton more money than we have in the past.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we have more money, but we are still two of the cheapest people on the face of the planet.
Yes, that's 100% fair.
And we love Game Pass because of that. Yes. So thank you.
We're
y'all.
The cheapest people who pay for all the services that give us free games. So at the end of the day, we're just paying out the nose to feel like we're cheap. But whatever, it's what the game economy is in 2020. And I don't hate it.
I don't hate it at all. I tell you what I need. I need more hard drive space.
Yes.
That's exactly what I need. We gotta do something about that. Which, by the way, I have an empty solid state drive sitting here that has been sitting here since like last Christmas. That I have so much work for you to do when you get here. That is also on the list. Before you leave my house, we gotta get that plugged in because I need the space.
Yes. I hear you.
It's a good place to be. It's lots of games to play, lots of stuff going on that is positive in this world when there's so much that's not. And I feel good about being a gamer right now.
Yeah, it is a nice distraction. It's a good hobby to have at this point in time because, yeah, the world kind of sucks. You want to talk about that for just a second, how the world kind of sucks, and then we'll get into cheerful stuff?
Yeah, I really do. And, like, I've been thinking about this for a couple of days, trying to figure out if we should engage this or not, because we're a gaming show, and I basically came to the conclusion that we're two guys with live mics, and if somebody has a responsibility to say something, doesn't mean that what we're going to say is right or correct in any way, but if people have responsibility to say something, it's two guys with live mics. So here we are. Essentially, the world is, I'm not going to say burning, because it's not technically burning, but there's lots of protesting going on and lots of different things. And I talked to a friend of ours this morning that is around our age that said something that I haven't heard a human say in a while. And that is that he said, I am frightened. And that really struck me when he said, I'm frightened, because of all the stuff that's going on. If you've lived under a rock, there has been some police brutality, and we have some political stuff, and we have some world stuff. And it's just not really a good place to be right now. And the whole reason that this is on my mind is because of that little kid you got in your house. We're two very, very, very white, privileged men. You have a very white, privileged wife. We have been privileged our entire life. We have been poor, but even poorer, we were still privileged. And now you have a child in your house that I'm going to step out there and say, me as her crazy Uncle Jay that she really hasn't spent time a whole lot of time with, is going to do everything that I can to help her experience the privilege that you and I have been lucky enough to stumble upon because of where and when we were born and the families that we have. She is not going to get that by default. And that has struck me this week. And my nieces will tell you I treat them very well. I spend lots and lots of money, and I don't know how I'm going to explain to my two nieces that I have by blood that are now young adults that I may have a favorite and they may not be it. So, all of the stuff that I've done for them, your daughter may get that and then some. And saying it out loud, I feel bad about it, but that's kind of the way it is. And because of what happened this week with George Floyd, I don't even know where to start because I am a white, privileged, crippled. I mean, I can't think of a better. If I had to be crippled, at least I'm white and privileged.
Right.
So I am that. I really have no room to speak on this topic. But your daughter is African-American. And that is something that we, I say we because I've included myself in this from day one. And at some point, your wife is probably going to be like, yo, you need to shut the hell up. but I sort of have from day one. And I feel like I think I'm going to cede the floor to you because I really don't know what to say. I'm interested in what you have to say, and then I'll kind of fill in the blanks.
Sure. I appreciate every bit of that. It's hard. It's obviously. I'm going to echo quite a bit of what you said because obviously we're in a situation. You and I personally, and lots of other people, our families, most people we know, I'm obviously heartbroken over the whole thing. I see it play out, and this is, again, it's a pattern. This is the first time we've seen this situation happen. And every time, I it just crushes me. It breaks my heart. I feel, every range of emotions, anger and frustration and on. But all of that with the lens of that privilege that you talked about, knowing that I'm not personally at any risk of that same fate. You know, I'm not going to more than likely be killed by a police officer because of the color of my skin. It's not something that is an existential threat to me that it is to a lot of friends I have, a lot of people I know. And then obviously this little girl that's living in my house at this point, you know, that I love wholly and completely. And so even in my awareness of my inability to completely relate with the situation, I want to so badly, you know, my heart's just broken for it. And it's so weird to try to navigate that again with the understanding that people I love are dealing with it in a radically different way than I am, because it is something that is an existential threat to them, like that they have to consider. Genevieve's gonna deal with stuff, obviously. We know that. We knew that.
She will.
Before we started our journey with adoption and everything else. But she's also going to have a lot of privilege. Because she has white parents, you know, and that's a weird thing to work through and try to process and other stuff. But we're still going to have conversations with her, you know, about how to be safe and how to be careful and what to do in situations. If you ever find yourself in a position where things are getting out of hand, and for everything I am, I can only hope that by the time she's a teenager and is likely going to start being in situations where this could become an issue, that maybe will have changed. My hope for optimism isn't high there, considering we really haven't changed that much in 40, 50, 60 years. You know, like we're going through a lot of the same things now that we went through. I mean, honestly, through the entire history of our country, but even in recent history, like we're still dealing with the same open wounds that have just never healed and never healed and never healed, and we're still there. And so maybe, and I'm always hopeful in the bleakness of these things of it being a catalyst to some meaningful change. I'm more encouraged, I think, each time one of these things happens and we see, you know, the kind of outcry around it, positive and negative. There's plenty of terrible things that are happening, but really wanting to focus on the positive aspects of protests in a national movement, really a global movement. I'm seeing protests happening in Europe about George Floyd, which is nuts. But God bless, you know, like that's great. Like that those voices carry, those voices are really important. I'm seeing people, you know, just even on my, you know, Facebook feed that aren't people that I would anticipate sharing, you know, agreeing about the elements of this topic on, that are posting things that I'm like, oh, I think you get this, you know, like I think we're making progress, that there's people that otherwise I would have written off as not being very empathetic in a situation like this, that are seemingly coming around. And those little things give me these little glimmers of hope that maybe for Genevieve, the world is going to be a bit more accommodating for her when she gets to the point that she's dealing with that. But the truth is, it's definitely not going to be fixed by then, and we're still going to be dealing with it as conversations we're going to be having forever. And yeah, it's tough. It's really that happening in the midst of a pandemic that is the catalyst for a global depression. Like, it is just a really, really bleak time in history right now. You know, like, for this is hopefully, God willing, going to be the darkest moment, you know, of kind of all things, you know, socioeconomic, health, you know, culture wise, this should be the apex. Hopefully nowhere in our lives do we see another time where all this terribleness converges at once like it has right now. It's a weird thing to be living through that right now and be processing that in kind of real time. God, I hope it's something that we're able to push through and start the very, 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 very long process of healing from. It's not a switch that's just going to turn off tomorrow and we're back to whatever normal was. I really appreciated, not to get overtly political here, but Barack Obama put out a statement about, you know, people wanting to get back to normal and saying for a lot of people, normal's not where we want to be. If you are Black in this country, there's a lot of things about normal that are pretty terrible, and that the goal needs to be changing what normal is, not getting back to normal, because for a lot of people, normal is a really, really scary place. And I think that's yeah, good perspective. So, yeah. That was rambling, but some of my thoughts.
No, that's an extremely good perspective, and I've always had a lot of respect for that guy and his ability to speak and to put things in an appropriate lens for what's going on. And the thing, I'm hopeful also, but I also know that I'm terrified about when she gets to that point, that you and I are going to have a hard time helping because we're not those people.
Yeah.
Like, we're what she's going to have to go through, we have no concept of. And I have some concept of, because I'm crippled and people treat me differently, and a whole lot of times they're not that nice, but it's not the same thing. And so I am terrified about that when she gets to that point, you and I are going to want to, like, take the blood out of our arms to help.
Yes.
And we may not be able to. And that's what scares me more than anything. So we are the two least qualified people to be talking about this.
Yeah.
At this point, that girl makes you more qualified than I am. But I just, the world's in a bad place, and it's going to get better, but I don't think it's going to get better quickly. Like, this idea of, okay, in a month, everything's going to be over and we're all going to be fine. Now, it's going to be a while. And I am thankful at this point, like I said, to be a gamer and to be able to escape into something that is not this.
Yeah,
you know.
For so. Sure. Yeah, it's fun to be looking forward to a video game that's about a pandemic instead of living through one. It's yeah, the escapism of The Last of Us is getting to be a little less escapist right now, which is unfortunate. But to wrap up, for us, I mean, personally, I don't know anybody cares about personally, but just really briefly, it's really important for us, obviously, that we also have influences in Genevieve's life that can relate. Having Black friends that are able to speak into her life in a way that we can't, that have those experiences, we are aware of our privilege. We are very much cognizant of that. Is something that's part of Lana and mine's conversation on a regular basis. is going to be part of conversation with Genevieve as well as she gets older. I mean, that's just the reality of what our life is. It's moments like this that make that really important to remember. And I was, holding her last night. She was having trouble sleeping. And so I was holding her and watching CNN at, 11 o'clock and just seeing just the destruction and the craziness of the people who are hurting and trying to be heard, and it's just it's pretty heavy. There's a lot in that moment that you're trying to process. That's not easy to work through. So yeah,
one real quick before we wrap up, we should have wrapped up 10 minutes ago, but I want to say something that I have learned in the process of doing this show. And to anybody who is listening, if you look at your life and you are someone who is not a minority and you don't think you're privileged in some way, you need to check yourself.
Yeah.
Because until we started this show, I'm not sure I realized how privileged I was. And so if you, like I said, if you look at your life and you're not a minority and you're looking at it going, well, I'm not that privileged. I got this and I got that and I got... No, you need to take a step back and realize that... 'cause I got family that I'm not sure that knows that they are.
Oh, yeah.
I know you do.
Yeah.
Because I do. And you, those, like, they're those people. There's no way to there's no way to broach that topic because they don't know. They don't know where they're at. Like they don't understand that there are people who live lives that are vastly and horribly different than theirs only because of who they are. And that's one thing I would say is if you, like I said, if you look at your life and you go, I'm not privileged, you need to rethink, because you probably are. If you think you're not, then you probably are.
Yeah, if you have any doubt of whether or not your privilege exists, it exists. One of the things that you're privileged with is not having to think about your privilege. It's a weird thing. I would echo every part of that sentiment and just add to that. Also, listen to people who are hurting in this moment. Just like without judgment, without trying to fix things, because obviously it's a much bigger systemic problem than any one of us is going to fix on our own.
But also the
idea of coming from a place where it seems like you know answers for what somebody else's pain is comes across as really disconnected.
Arrogant.
And arrogant, yeah. For sure. Listen without judgment That I think is a really, really important step for those of us who are fortunate enough to not have to deal with these issues on a day-to-day basis, which again, you and I are. We have that privilege. We are fortunate in that way that this is not something that we fear for. But there are lots of people who do. Super briefly, because I keep thinking of stuff. I have a dear friend I worked with for quite a while. I may have shared this story before. Who's black, who told me and another friend about a time that, he got pulled over at the airport. He's in his 50s. What you would stereotype as somebody who's getting into trouble. Got pulled over at the airport and had a gun pulled on him for nothing. Like, he wasn't doing anything. Like, legitimately just, you know, just was driving while being black and ended up with a gun pulled on him. And he just talked about how terrifying that moment was, you know, and just something that he never, you know, would have thought that he would deal with, that he had to deal with. And it's just mind-boggling, you know, like, a cop's not going to pull a gun on me ever, you know, unless I'm doing something really, 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 really dumb. I would have to be doing something incredibly dangerous for a cop to pull a gun on me. For a lot of people, that's just not the same. And it's just, yeah, listen to those stories when somebody talks about those experiences that they've had. Yeah, listen to those stories. It's really,
and
really
and I will say, if you are out there and if you are a person that deals with this stuff on a daily basis, I can't believe I'm about to say this because we're a gaming show, but if you're a person who deals with this stuff on a daily basis, come, and you need somebody to talk to, come talk to us. Yeah. Like, we answer email, we pay attention. If you need somebody to talk to, or more importantly, just listen, we can do that. Like, I will reiterate what I've already said, and that I have no knowledge of what you're dealing with, but if I can help you in some way, I will. So do not be afraid to reach out to Tommy or I. We can't speak for anybody else, but for the two of us, if we can do anything, we will, and do not be afraid. And I know that we have at least a few people that listen to this show that deal with this, and we've been fortunate enough our entire run of this show to have those people who are living life differently than the way that we live it. So if you're out there and you need somebody to pay attention, like, we'll definitely pay attention.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
That so said, should we go to the pandemic game?
We should go to the pandemic game. Super cheerful. We did a state of play a couple of days ago about The Last of Us 2. And the takeaway, I think, from that, more than anything else, at least for me, was, man, that's going to be a dark game. That's exactly what we need in this moment of everything falling apart, is a game that is like, so here's what happened after everything fell apart. There's fungus zombies, you know. Like, cool. That said, the game looks freaking fantastic, and so let's talk about a few of the things we saw with The Last of Us Part Two in this this kind of extended teaser. This was what they would have shown. I think it was actually what they were planning for GDC or either something, you know, whatever it was. This was something they had planned on doing in front of some people, and it didn't end up that way with the pandemic, obviously. Few things that maybe are new details, and then we can talk about just kind of overall feel and that kind of stuff. Showed us some gameplay and talked a little bit more about the world, about the factions. And so there's a couple of big factions, this kind of big military group that you're going to deal with, and then also this kind of religious cultish type group that you're going to deal with. And that's on top of fungus zombies, clickers and such that you're going to have to deal with. They even teased a couple of new types of infected zombie things. And then Druckmann teased that the most terrifying ones aren't even shown yet. You're just going to have to find them in the game, which is super exciting. So got to see a little bit of that, got to see a little bit about how things like combat are going to work. Even more so, we'd seen some of that in the past. They just went a little bit deeper. I think a couple of things I really enjoyed from it was seeing the kind of scale of the levels. And so it's very much a Naughty Dog game, that it's not open world, but they've Naughty Dog has been really good with kind of each subsequent iteration of a game, Uncharted and this, really, of making those levels that you're in feel bigger, be more immersive. And this looks like they took that like a whole nother leap forward of really, really large level, so much so that you're going to need a horse to traverse some of it, just scale-wise to get across it. It's going to need a faster form of travel, which is really cool. There's jumping, ropes. It feels like they're bringing in some of kind of Uncharted gameplay to the very, very dark world of The Last of Us, as opposed to the kind of campy Indiana Jones world of Uncharted.
Okay, so back up and let me reiterate, a horse to get around. Like, I saw her on a horse and my first thought was, that's a bad idea, because horses are not fun when they die out from under you.
Yes.
That's what I thought when I saw that. So I texted, we have not had a chance to talk. I texted you, and as it normally is, in the middle of May, it was a one-way text, and I basically said, bro, I'm really excited to have an accessibility controller, but The Last of Us, I don't think is one of them things that I'm going to plug in and just play till I drop. Because this is The Last of Us as a series, I think, is very much a Jamie and Tommy type game. Like, I don't want to solo it. I don't know how badly you want to solo it. Like, there's parts of The Last of Us 2 that I'm looking at like, yeah, I don't really want to do that by myself. Like, I don't know if that makes me a wuss or, like, if I have some sort of mental issue or what, but that's kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah, no, 100%. It's going to be terrifying much of the time, I think, in a really, really good, exciting way, but it's going to be terrifying. I'm not opposed to that, but it's a dark game, and it's one that I think is going to be a lot more fun with somebody else involved.
Well, and the thing is, the thing, so this game is going to be different than other ones because of the time that we're in. Like, because of where we're at, we're in the middle of a pandemic, and we have all these protests and all this junk that we've already talked about. I was watching that, and I thought, man, I hope this is not where we're headed.
Yeah. Like,
fungus zombies aside, there's probably some science show that will tell us that could probably happen.
Right.
That was my takeaway was, man, I hope we're not headed here because I don't want to see this.
So far, the game of the pandemic has been Animal Crossing, right? Like, that's the game that's come out during this time. That was a huge success across, you know, the kind of a gaming spectrum and non-gaming spectrum alike. Like, a ton of people who don't really game are playing Animal Crossing. You know, like, it's just fascinating. There's a whole talk show that is hosted in Animal Crossing that I saw, like, the guests recently were Elijah Wood and Danny Trejo. You know, like, those two people are playing Animal Crossing and are going to a talk show in Animal Crossing. Like, it's this bizarre world, but it's such a great game for the time because it's pure escapism. It's, you live on an island where everything is happy. The worst thing that happens to you is you get bit by a scorpion or a tarantula and like wake up in your front door. Like, that's it. That's the worst thing that can happen to you in the game. And now we're going to go, you know, full 180 and go to the pandemic, everything sucks, super, super dark game. That's also going to be a really, really big defining game during this time. Like, when we look back at the pandemic, there's a good chance that Animal Crossing and The Last of Us are the two games that really stick out as being games of this time that weren't ever, you know, obviously designed to release in the midst of a pandemic, but just for completely opposite reasons are going to be really, really important, influential games that are going to be kind of cultural touch points of this era.
Because let me repeat again, if I haven't been clear enough, this thing that we're in, it's not over.
Right.
And it's not going to be over for quite some time. I know things are opening back up. People are starting to feel optimistic. I am afraid, not for myself personally, but I am afraid of the what I'm trying to find a good name for. And right now, all I can come up with is the second wave of infections.
Yeah.
Because things are starting to reopen. And I to be clear, things need to reopen. We got to do something to deal with this economy thing we got happening that the whole world is having to deal with. And so my brother put it very aptly. We as a company are reopening in stages. And that's kind of the way the world needs to be to reopen, I think. I mean, like, we can't just sit here forever. Gotta have some forward motion, but you also gotta be smart about it. So all that being said, if you think this thing's coming to an end, it's not. I really do think you're right. I think The Last of Us is going to be the second game in this, and Cyberpunk may be the third, which is kind of terrifying. I really think it could go that long very easily.
Yeah,
so,
me too.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah, what an interesting series of games to be coming out this year. Different kind of views of the future, I suppose. So, one of which is on a fantasy deserted island. The other two are incredibly dark and dystopian. So, choose your poison, I imagine.
Yeah.
All that said, the rest of the stuff from The Last of Us, go if you haven't seen it, it's 20 minutes of greatness. Just watching through.
Can I gripe about something?
Yeah.
I got a gripe about these state of plays. I'm sorry. I'm a little curmudgeon-y. I love Sony. I love what they're trying to do. But for crying out loud, guys, 20 minutes, not enough. Like, the thing that I'm having issues with state of play, and this is coming from a guy that doesn't have time for anything, and I know you're in the same boat, is like, you're all prepped and stuff for this thing that's coming. Like, Sam had it posted on the Facebook page 3 days early. And then the day gets there, and you look up, and you realize what time it is, and you're like, crap, it's already over. Yeah. Like, they don't last any time at all, like 20 minutes, and it's done. And I understand. I talked last show about how tight all this stuff has been, and I understand to keep it that tight, you have to do it in short segments, but it's really hard to... it's really hard to get into something if, like, I think one of the previous state of plays was like 12 minutes. And I love you guys, but if all you've got 12 minutes, wait till you've got like 30.
Right.
You know, like, maybe I'm the only one that thinks that's kind of nuts, but that's kind of how I feel. I'm glad it was a really great 20 minutes. But I'm like, okay, yeah, can we have more?
Yeah. I don't disagree. What I would say is I for a single game, I think that feels like a good amount of time. You know, like, I would rather have 20 minutes of one game than 20 minutes of 12 games like Microsoft tried to do recently. You know, that you don't learn anything about any of them. You don't see anything. And granted, those were all obviously much farther away. This game is just right around the corner, and they won. Something to give it a push, and I think it's a good push. So,
real quick before we wrap on The Last of Us, I have to say, for as much as we just complained about the kind of negativeness of the whole environment. Every time she stabbed somebody, all I could hear was Scott Van Pelt saying, "Aye-ho!" You know, just like she stabbed somebody in the neck, and all I could hear is Scott Van Pelt screaming, "Aye-ho!"
And good gracious, was there a lot of stabbing people in the neck. That's going to be a violent game.
And everywhere else, I'm like... I saw her stab some people a couple of times, and I'm like, that's the lady you don't mess with there. She will mess you up. That is something, and please don't hear me the wrong way, but that's going to be a part of this game that I think is going to be a very pleasing aspect to it.
Yes.
Because some of these factions, I think, are people you're really not going to like. And it has a very Far Cry feel in that the people that you don't like are also really loud.
Yeah.
And like, we're awesome, and we're going to take over the world, we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. So when you get to snap one of them in the neck, it's really satisfying.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of it. That's, if nothing else, what I took away from that is you're going to be stabbing people in the neck all the time. Just blood gushing out of people's throats constantly. So,
Or eyes.
Or whatever. It's going to be a good time. Something to definitely look forward to. So that said, we're keeping on with Sony here and talking some specifics about PlayStation 5 now. First of all, as mentioned, the first kind of big full PlayStation 5 event, outside of when they released the tech specs, which didn't show any kind of gaming, is happening next Thursday, June 4th, at 1 p.m. Pacific time. So 3 for us, 4 on the East Coast. Promising at least an hour's worth, and so more than 20 minutes. We'll see how long it ends up being. But essentially, an E3-type event that is going to be talking about the PlayStation 5, and again, looks like they're going to really, really focus on software. Maybe we'll get a glimpse at what the box looks like. According to some people, they think that's likely because they're starting production, and so they're just worried about leaks. And so the way you get ahead of a leak is you just put it out yourself. And so there's a decent chance that we'll see what the actual hardware looks like, if that's something that you care a ton about. Probably not going to happen as a price point, in part because it's still a ways before it launches, and in part because we don't know Microsoft's price point yet, and they're playing this game of chicken about price points to see who kind of caves first. But neither one of those things do I care about at nearly as much as seeing video games. And so if they show us a big slate of video games, as they're promising to do, I'm really excited about this event.
It's going to be a lot of fun, and we have, for several months, we have been extremely apologetic, and maybe we shouldn't be apologetic about our passionate love for the PlayStation. Like, Microsoft, as much as I love Microsoft, the Xbox just ain't doing it for either one of us. So I'm really excited about that. From that standpoint, is that we know what we've gotten from Sony in the past. We know they know how to do software packages. And so I'm excited because of that, because I think I know what's coming. Where they could fail is if I don't get that, I'm going to be like, yo, what happened? You know, because They know how to do this, and if they all go, you know, if they go weird Microsoft on it and show us some weird camera that takes a 3D image of your face, then I'm going to have a problem, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I think we're excited because we think we know what we're going to get, and what we're going to get is pretty awesome.
Yeah. I think you're exactly right. Like, I'm excited about what I think is very predictable. I'm not excited to be surprised by this. I want exactly what I'm expecting from this, which is just really sexy games. I want to see Horizon 2. You know, I want to see the stuff that we know and are familiar with that looks incredibly beautiful and sexy on next-gen hardware. And that's really all it's going to take to get me pumped. So let's talk about a couple of things kind of strategically that Sony is doing, and then specifically how that compares to maybe what Microsoft is doing for next-gen. So Sony has told any developers that are making PlayStation 4 games that in order or after middle of July, that those games also must be compatible with PlayStation 5. And so any games that are releasing on PlayStation 4 after middle of July have to also be compatible on PlayStation 5, which, okay, makes total sense. That just brings the library up for PlayStation 5 games. But Sony is also saying that they're going to make PlayStation 5 games that aren't going to run on your PlayStation 4. And this is where there's a fairly significant difference from what we've heard from Microsoft up until this point. We'll see if this is truly the direction that Microsoft continues to go. But Microsoft has talked about this big, long transition period of a year or two where everything will be cross-console. You can play games on the Xbox Series X, but those games will also be available on the Xbox One. You're just going to get that higher version. Sony is saying, we want to give you games that are PlayStation 5 games that the PlayStation 4 isn't capable of running, that you have to have this hardware to experience these games we want you to experience, which is a much more kind of traditional approach to how next-gen works. Microsoft is taking a new approach to what it means to go next-gen. And I'm really, really interested to see how that plays out.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now that I'm going to eat a whole lot of a whole lot of crow right this second.
This is because our favorite meal on Gaming Uncensored is crow.
Yeah, because we eat a lot of it, and I'm about to eat a bunch of it right now because we've said for years and years and years, backwards compatibility is awesome. But the fact that I have to have a PlayStation 5 to play PlayStation 5 games, and you gotta have that hardware to make it that awesome, I kind of dig. Like, I think it's a really great marketing thing that Sony has, because they're like, you know, we love our hardware and we want you to be able to play stuff on the PlayStation 4, but if you want to go to the bleeding edge, you gotta go here. And you're not gonna be able to go backwards. Sorry. I think the reason I feel that way is because of Unreal 5.
Interesting. Like, yeah.
Like, Unreal 5 kind of changed my Unreal Engine 5, I should say, changed my thinking in that I saw that and I went, holy crap, we don't have anything like that. And then I saw the NVIDIA thing, and I went, holy crap, I got to get some new hardware. So I want to know how you feel about that, because I changed gears based on that one demo, basically, I think.
Yeah. As we talked about when we talked about that Unreal 5 debut, it's the first thing that really, really feels next-gen that we've experienced, which got me excited about next gen, which is something that just really hasn't happened yet. And I think what I feel with Microsoft right now is kind of the same thing that we've said through the entire, what's now almost the whole life cycle of the Xbox One, as it's without its successor also out on the market, arguably is going to have a little bit more of a lifespan, but you're not going to buy one after this holiday season, right? The thing we've said about the Xbox One kind of from day one is, it's great tech, and I'm really excited for when they give me a compelling reason to buy it. And that's what I already feel about Series X, is like, man, it's looking like really good tech. It's probably going to be a good price point. I'm really interested to see if they do the Series S thing where they have the kind of hybrid cloud machine. That's something I'm really fascinated by. And I'm still kind of waiting for them to give me a reason to buy it. And it feels like with this kind of long transition thing that Microsoft's trying to do, we're going to be kind of sitting in that nebulous space for a little while, which is kind of what the whole Xbox One experience has been for me up until now, is just kind of sitting in that nebulous space, waiting for a reason and waiting for a reason. It just never came. And Sony's going to give us a reason. Sony's going to say, here's Horizon 2 or whatever other, you know, crazy software, theoretically. I'm you know, maybe they don't come out with any big software, but I have a hard time believing that. But whatever other big, so Spider-Man 2, a great example of a game that we will must play. And they're going to say, Spider-Man 2 is this amazing game that you can only experience on PlayStation 5. And I say, okay, you got me. You got me a reason I got to go get a PlayStation 5. Or I just don't have an excuse not to have a PlayStation 5 at this point because I got to play Spider-Man 2. And if there's nothing that's doing that on the Series X, God, I'd love to have one. But if I don't have to have one to play the games that I want to play, you know, like I'm not going to go out and spend that money when I could also spend that money on a PlayStation 5. And I'm probably not buying both early on. You know, like I feel like Sony's going to give me a reason to buy their console near launch. I don't think Microsoft's going to do that. And then I don't know that Microsoft will ever follow through on giving me a reason, which is exactly where we are with the Xbox One.
Well, and if you want to think about this from the other side of it, the only other example of this right now for us, this is a Jamie and Tommy thing that probably doesn't apply to anybody else, but for the first time in my life, I'm looking towards September going, okay, I got to come up with like $1,000 because in September, when CD Projekt gives me Cyberpunk, I got to at least upgrade my graphics card because I ain't playing that without ray tracing. I'm just not. And maybe I'm being too snobbish about, like, I'm sure it'll be great without it, but to me, Cyberpunk, at least until I see something that says otherwise, is kind of that same kind of Unreal 5 kind of zone. Like, I'm not sure if we've ever seen anything like this.
Yeah.
And if you tell me that I got to go buy some new hardware to get the most out of it, then, like, I'm really hoping somebody sends me one before I go spend $1,000. But if nobody sends me one, I'm going to be putting up some money because I got to play that at its best. And that's not even considering the monitor that does HDR, which we both need.
Yep.
This is the upgrade title on the other side, and normally we don't feel this way about a piece of software. Am I talking to myself here, or do you feel the same way?
I do for the most part. I don't know that I'm playing Cyberpunk on PC or if I'm playing it on console yet. I'm not decided on that point. I'm waiting to see. Specifically, honestly, this is the deciding factor, is whether or not they're going to have the auto upgrade thing on PlayStation 4 to PlayStation 5, because I'm going to want to play it before the PlayStation 5 comes out, but then I'm going to want to play it when the PlayStation 5 comes out as well, because it takes me 3 years to get through a game, and so I'll still be playing it when the PlayStation 5 comes out. And so I don't know where I'm going to play it at, but if I play it on the PC, I'm right with you, and I would rather spend that money that I might put towards an Xbox Series X to a beefier graphics card and getting some prettier graphics on my PC and doing it that way. Again, that's compelling. I'm not buying an Xbox Series X for Cyberpunk. There's two other places I would play that before playing it on Xbox Series X. I'd play it on PlayStation, or I'd play it on PC before playing it on Xbox.
I may be incorrect in this thinking because I don't think CD Projekt has ever said this, but everything that I say, and there she is.
Yeah.
There we go. So everything that I've seen about Cyberpunk says to me, yo, this is a PC title. Yeah. Like, this is one of them things that you got to play on PC. CD Projekt has never said that. So I may be totally wrong, but that's how it feels.
Yeah, right? Honestly, the reason I don't feel that way is because of getting burned. I'm not going to say I know this won't happen. I have more faith in CD Projekt Red at this point than I do from 10 or 15 years ago. But I got burned so bad by the first two Witcher games on the PC of just having game-breaking issues on PC.
I still want to play them. Like, I haven't played The Witcher 3 because I'm like, I really want to play these two.
And so I'm kind of pre-programmed to go, I'd rather go on a console with a CD Projekt Red game just because I know it's, theoretically, know it's going to work there. It's much more likely to work there without all the variables of the PC world involved. And so that's a little bit my bias on that. It's obviously going to play great either place. Where you play it at, is it going to matter, a console or a PC? So, yeah.
So, because there's a little girl in the background, we probably need to wrap, but I got to bring something up with you since we're in this zone. Talking about these types of games, I don't know where else you wanted to go on the show notes.
Yeah, let me just look really quick, just to make sure. One thing on CD Projekt Red, this is fascinating, and so I'll throw it in here while we're talking about it. CD Projekt Red, as of for a little bit, a day or two ago, was officially by kind of wealth the largest publisher in Europe, overtook Ubisoft to become the largest publisher in Europe. Now that probably won't last.
Thank you, Witcher 3.
But isn't that nuts? CD Projekt Red, that has one franchise, overtook Ubi, which has obviously more than one franchise. So God bless you guys. Keep up the hard work. And I'll mention one other thing. BlizzCon officially canceled. No shock there, but BlizzCon not happening this year. Go by the show notes, gamingcensored.com, for releases. Just nothing big happening right now on the game release front. So all the fun stuff's coming. It'll happen in the next month or two. Ghost of Tsushima and The Last of Us are both within the next month and a half. Just nuts.
That's a huge deal. And one thing I wanted to bring up with you, and I was kind of joking about it on the Facebook page, was that I finished Mankind Divided, played all the DLC, played all that stuff, and I'm looking through my library thinking there's all kinds of new stuff I need to play. There's Disco Elysium. There's Dove sent me another game from 2 years ago called Alien Isolation that apparently got a Game of the Year award somewhere that looks like it's scary as crap, and I don't want to play it. Like,
it's supposed to be really good, but yeah, I wouldn't touch it.
Yeah.
That's outside my comfort zone.
That's one of those that if we're going to play it, we got to play it together with all on the lights camera. Yeah. So like, I have new stuff I need to play, but when I finished Mankind Divided, the thing that I thought was, I want more of that. Right?
Yeah.
Like, I want more of that type of a title, and what I've realized in the last 2 weeks is that those game types are, I can't believe I went 40 years and didn't realize that, but those game types are my jam, right? Like, that's, if I'm going to default to one game type, it's going to be the Deus Ex, Elder Scrolls, Fallout, type open world kind of thing. Like, those are my jam, and I hate to say that because I have an accessibility controller that's gonna rock, but I'm not gonna be any good on any of those other type of games, really, as much as I'm gonna love that accessibility controller. These I know how to play. And so I've been playing Skyrim, which I sent left off a text, and I may have sent you a text, and my text that I sent to Duff, which, by the way, I'm jealous, folks, because he's drinking bourbon over there.
I'm not. I'm drinking coffee.
Okay. Because I don't have... Right. Yeah, I heard that. I'm like, he's got booze.
That's for after girl goes to bed.
Yeah. So, I've been playing Skyrim, and I sent Duff a text, and I'm like, man, 10 years later, Skyrim is still great. Like, really great. Like, all time, there may not be anything like this out there anywhere. Great. And I say that because in the last 2 days, I had to play a quest twice because I went through it too fast and did something the wrong way and broke it and could never get it to do what it was supposed to do. And so I just killed the guy. And like you did with Final Fantasy VII, I've been meaning to ask you about that. You replayed a section on the video because apparently you wanted to make a change. But I got to the end of the quest. I got all the stuff done, and I went on to the next quest, and it's just hanging there in my quest log because it can't be completed because it bugged. And I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. And so I went back and redid it, and it worked well because I knew what I was supposed to do and what I was supposed to trip and what I was supposed to not. But we said it way back in the day. I'm going to take a Tony Kornheiser line here and say, I remember what I say and I remember what you say when we're on the air. We said it way back in the day that Skyrim is a living, breathing world. And one thing that I want to you guys to take away from this is that I'm level 40, which I realized in vanilla Skyrim, I'm actually not quite to level 40, but I realized in vanilla Skyrim is only halfway to the level cap, right? So I'm level 40. And I'm playing last night, and I'm in Winterhold, and it's snowing, and I'm like, okay, cool, it's snowing, everything's great. And I see somebody look up, and they're like, oh my gosh, it's a dragon! And I'm like, cool, a dragon, I'm taking a dragon out. And, like, I'm getting all ready, I'm getting my potions, I'm getting all that, I'm like, I'm good to go. And dude totally smoked me. And I'm like, okay, that was a fluke. I'm just going to reload and do that again. I can take this guy. I'm level 40. He smoked me twice more. Twice more. I got smoked by a dragon.
Nice.
Right? It just... And I'm not talking about, like, I almost won. I mean, like, smoked. Like... Nope, see ya. You're not ready for me yet. And it really is this living, breathing world. And this quest that I had to redo, one of the things that I did was there's this guy guarding this house that you got to get into. And most people just kill the guy. But I figured out that the guy had a debt in Skyrim, and I had the option to go pay off this guy's debt. And so I go to the lady, I'm like, I want to pay off dude's debt. What do you want me to do? And she's like, I want you to go get this quill that I decided to have this idiot go get for me. And he was apparently drunk on the lake one day, and he was bringing the quill back, and he hit some rocks, and the quill was lost. And so I'm in the lake at Winterhold at night, swimming around trying to find this guy's, you know, blown up boat. And and the chest with this quill in it. And so I find it, and I take it to the lady, and she's like, here's a note. Go give this guy. And so I do, and it all works out. And I'm thinking to myself, that is the only game that I know of that is that intricate, other than maybe The Witcher 3, in that I would have, had I not been looking for it, I would have thought the only option was to kill that dude.
Yeah.
And so I say that to say that I'm really enjoying Skyrim. Again, I have 146 hours in it, and I told you I was just going to beat it, but I was looking at my quest list. I've been in like 2 days, and I have like 15 quests that I picked up just walking around. And I'm like, this is not right. Like, I don't have time for this. But they're all so like woven into the fabric of the game that it makes total sense. Like, none of them are like, we just need to fill time, so here, go do this. And I wanted to know if you had any, because I know you booted it up a couple of weeks ago or a month ago for some VR stuff. I wanted to know how you felt about that, because here we are playing Skyrim 10 years later, and it's still great.
Yeah, it's really a testament for how ahead of its time that game was. And going back to it, there are definitely things about it that feel dated when compared to, you know, especially something like The Witcher, which The Witcher 3 is coming up on 5 years old, I think. It's been out for a while as well. But it's a game that holds up incredibly well, obviously, in part because of the modding community, and it keeps it fresh. And so having, you know, all the potential updates of user interface and graphics and stuff that makes it feel like a more modern game, even after being out a while, is great. But at its heart, it's still just a really, really well-designed game. And that matters. That's a big thing. A well-designed game is going to be a well-designed game that hopefully will hold up for a long time. And then the things that don't hold up well about it, which is usually things like visuals and gameplay, can be corrected over time. It's just kind of the perfect formula. One of the reasons we joke about Skyrim being released on everything is because it's been adaptable to be able to be re-released and staying fresh in that way. It's just really a testament to the development of that game that there's very, very few examples of. I can't tell you another one off the top of my head that's not an Elder Scrolls game. You know, like, there's still people playing Oblivion, for crying out loud. And so
Fallout, Fallout's
in that same kind of universe too. And so they've hit on something there that's obviously successful. That also, I mean, they've had to be very, very open with their IP in that way too, you know, that most companies aren't willing to do. Most companies aren't going to just let the mod community do whatever they want to your game. It's kind of a unique thing that I love. It's just great. And it's going to be years and years and years before we get the next Elder Scrolls game, which just kind of breaks my heart.
So a couple of things before we wrap on that. I have a few mods installed. I installed Vortex, whatever that thing is, and it's not awful. I don't mind it. But I am looking specifically for a couple of mods. I really want a good stealth mod, because I'm used to playing Mankind Divided and other games like Metal Gear games where you can knock people out. And I really miss the ability to, like, either knock somebody out or go all Riddick on somebody from the back and, like, stab them in the neck. You know what I'm saying? Like, I really want that. And I found one mod that is called Knockout NPCs that apparently does that, but it needs another mod to make it work. It actually needs like three. I have two of them. But there's another mod that it needs to make it work that for some reason is is hidden on Nexus. Like, it literally says this mod is hidden. So I'm not sure what to do about that, but that's what I really want. That's what Skyrim is missing, is I want to be able to sneak up behind somebody and knife them, because I have, you know, a thief that's like halfway to being a thief. Like, he's not a slouch.
Yeah.
And like, I can be like crouched in the shadows, and some dude walks up and goes, "Yo, who are you?" And I'm going, "I'm not here. How can you see me?"
Yeah.
And it's really annoying. So I really, really need that mod. If you know of that mod, please help me find it. GamingUncensored@gmail.com. Or if you know of some really good visual mods, I got the 2000 textures from like 5 years ago. I'm looking for some really, really, really good looking mods, because I have a 1080 and I can afford it.
Yeah.
So if you know those, did you install any that I need to know about? Because I know you did the package thing that you told me about, which I still have not found. Like, I don't really want to do that, because I have what I have installed now is kind of working.
Right.
So I don't really want
to. Yeah, it'll totally screw up everything you've heard. Yeah. But it did have some good stuff in it. I'll try to find it. And I'll send you the link, at least, so you can see what they use to make it pretty. Because they did a really good job of making it pretty. I was very impressed. So, yeah, I'll see if I can find that. I don't remember what it's called off the top of my head. Had some weird name.
Like,
so.
Like mine's pretty, but I know it could be better.
Yeah.
And oh, that's the other thing I want to talk about. I don't know if you ran into this, but like, I have Skyrim sitting on one of my mechanical drives, and I said to myself when I started messing with it, I need to move this to a solid state. I haven't moved it to a solid state because it loads really fast on my machine. Like, stupid fast.
Yeah.
And just because it's so old, you know, and the processor and graphics card are what they are. It's almost like it's sitting on a solid state, but it's not.
Yeah.
So I'm really enjoying that. It's a great game. I'm gonna play it for a while. I feel really bad to all of you that have bought the games. I apologize. I will get to them eventually. But I think I'm going to be in Skyrim for a little bit. And if you would like to join me, sir, I'd love that.
Yeah. Maybe. It's just so many games at this point. So.
Yeah. So. Hey, there she is. It's time to run the show.
Did you want to say hi to Jamie? Yeah, it fell. She knocked over a light.
Oh, that's from pictures.
It's from pictures?
Mm-hmm. On my own phone.
Yeah. I think I lost Jamie.
No, I'm here.
Oh, there he is.
I'm here. I'm all good. Are you ready to wrap the show, babe?
Hi.
Hey, what are you doing?
I'm good.
You're good.
You're good. I know that's your daddy. You know, me and your daddy were talking to some people right now. You want to help me tell them bye?
No.
You don't?
No, I'm to talk to him.
You want to talk to
him? I'm not going anywhere, but do you want
to? That's Jamie.
That's Jamie. You're right.
Yeah, that's me. That's me. Yep, that's me. And here, go ahead, sir.
I was just going to say, see if she's ready to wrap the show.
Yep, it's time to wrap the show. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Say what Jamie tells you to say, okay?
I said so.
You ready? Here we go. You ready? Say, I'm Genevieve, and we're Gaming Uncensored, and we're out.
Wow.
did it. You did it.
One more time. One more time.
A really big.
Wow.
That'll work. I'll take it. See good y'all stuff. Later. The lady said it. That's it. The show's over. You know where we're at. We're out.
Would you like to submit a segment for the show? Send it to gamingandcensored@gmail.com. And don't worry, we'll play just about anything. Gaming Uncensored.